What's up, guys? Hope this message finds you well. I'm looking forward to providing you with this conversation with Bill Pasha. He's an entrepreneur, investor, and a restaurateur. He made a career in media production before coming to Frisco, Texas with his wife, Debbie. And they have very much succeeded already by bringing several great restaurant concepts to the city. He's also working on a very, very exciting concept to bring to Dallas. Nusret Steakhouse and Mr. Salt Bay should be coming to Texas fourth quarter, most likely. So we're very pumped to hear that and super excited to provide you with Bill's story. And I'm looking forward to hearing your feedback. Cheers.
This is the Tomas Show, your source for personal and professional development.
Welcome to another episode of the Tomas Show. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to the conversation with a good friend. I'm very grateful that he's on the show today and dedicated his some of his valuable time to see me. Mr. Bill Pasha, welcome, Bill.
Thank you so much for having me this morning. It's a pleasure.
Bill is a president and managing partner of MBMI Companies, an organization that he actually runs together with his lovely wife, Debbie, who we definitely want to give a shout out to. And there's different components that come to the business here, and I would love for Bill to kind of dive in into details and what they do and how they do it. There's different verticals, dimensions. I've always been very impressed with what Bill does. We actually originally met at a Frisco Chamber of Commerce.
It's true. The Frisco Chamber of Commerce is unlike many chambers of commerce in that it actually accomplishes many of their goals and certainly provides outstanding networking for all levels of executives at all types of companies. So it was a pleasure to meet you many months ago, and I'm very happy to be here today.
Yes, and where we met actually was the International Business Council, which I was very privileged to begin with to be a part of that group. And I was just always very impressed how Bill not only provided a very good insight, you know, when he was asked for an opinion, he always had something valuable and meaningful to say. But not only that, as we kind of transitioned and organized and hosted some events, I always was very in awe in terms of how Bill goes about his business, how he conducts interviews. You know, I've attended some of your events, and I was just very impressed how you always I think one in particular, I think it was with some of the Kidzania executives, which is a big park that is coming to Frisco, and just the level of insight, the level of your inquisitive questions, how prepared you were. You know, as a moderator, you know, this was something that I even came up to you afterwards and I said, Bill, can you run every panel, every event? Because it really, I felt like you take the best out of the guests, out of the speakers, out of the panelists. So I admire that about you as well. And I'm just incredibly, you know, thankful that we are friends today, and you know, you, Debbie, and we're just happy that you guys are in Frisco. So I couldn't be more happy to have you here today and to highlight your story. So,
well, you're very kind. You know, a hollow vessel probably makes the most noise, which is why I'm probably good at this. But you know, I spent many years in the broadcast business, doing both radio and television for some very large groups. I worked with Westinghouse. I worked with CBS. I worked with Paxson Communications, which Bud Paxson was the founder of Home Shopping Network and one of the largest privately owned broadcast companies in the United States. It is today the ION Television Networks, as a matter of fact, but has since passed. As well as Entercom, which is now the number two, I think, broadcast radio group in the country. And I was very, very fortunate in that from the time I was 8 years old in doing my first radio commercials for Coca-Cola in Detroit, Michigan, all the way through a career that went through Canada, the Eastern Canada, Central Canada, the Northeast, down through Boston and into Dallas. And then, you know, it's easier to list where I haven't lived than where I have lived. Being in the broadcast business is a little bit like being in the military. You go where they send you. But over the years, I've had some great mentors who have been able to show me through personal demonstration what people enjoy asking and what they enjoy learning. And I have always found that if you ask questions that people actually want the answers to, they think you're a good interviewer when all you're really doing is being a good human being.
No, I completely agree. Being kind and being a good human being is something that I think, you know, I emphasize that at all times, because we are all professionals at the end of the day, but, you know, we can't forget that we're humans, and we have to, you know, obviously treat each other with kindness, empathy, and respect. So let's dive in a little deeper into you know, what we talked about before we started, you know, a recording here is we share a little bit of a background and a connection with the state of Maine, which in Frisco, Texas, that's where we both are fortunate to work as we speak, and that's where we met. But it's interesting because I don't think that many Frisco residents probably have even been to Maine or have some type of a connection with this state. So what is yours?
Well, in 1978, so 41 years ago, boy, how does that date me? 41 years ago, I made the transition from Halifax, Nova Scotia, where I was working, to a little tiny radio station in the capital of Maine, in Augusta. I walked in there. I was 18 or 19 years old. I was hired as the boss, as the program director. And for people who don't know what a program director does in radio, if you've ever seen WKRP in Cincinnati, that was Andy's character. So I was the one that got to deal with the big guy who, yes, indeed, did talk like this. I walked in and I introduced myself, and he said, "Who are you?" I said, I'm the new program director that you hired." He said, "You know, you can't be the program director. What are you, about 12?" And so that was a short-lived environment. But ultimately, in the course of my travels, I ended up in Bangor, Maine, where I also attended college at the University of Maine at Orono, which is a suburb of Maine, of Bangor, which is kind of a funny concept, because Bangor in itself, I think, is, I don't know, maybe 30,000 people. It's pretty small. So we kind of have some history together in Bangor because of your prep school, which was just north of the city.
Yes. I've spent a year, my first year in U.S. actually, you know, just about a year, an hour north, an hour and a half north in a small little town, Lee, Maine. All we had is post office, gas station, and school, really. You know, I was telling you off the record, 20 minutes away was the closest McDonald's. So they really isolated us. And you know, I always will remember Maine for ability really to focus. I feel like, you know, there's no place, if they seclude you, you can really hone into your craft and kind of focus. Our purpose was to really obviously get good grades, you know, get qualified as foreigners to earn a scholarship or even get noticed by some of the universities, and then play basketball kind of all over New England area. So we traveled to Augusta, to Bangor, to Portland, you know, in different states, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, etc. So it was always I cherished that experience. It was my first year. You know, I remember landing in Boston my coach picked me up, and I'm like, I made it. Where am I going? And then we made this drive, you know, through, I think, Augusta and North to school. And I go to sleep, you know, I'm jet lagged. I wake up and I go outside and I'm like, there's nothing here.
Three trees, a deer, and a moose.
Yes. But, you know, nevertheless, it was a great experience. I made some great friendships. As a matter of fact, a guy that I played basketball with at the time is getting married this weekend. And I was telling you, I'm going up there to Providence with my wife. I actually need to celebrate him and Jessica. So it's interesting, you know. It's that that main connection. I think it's very, very rare. Like I said, I would never expect that, but you know, those connections are made usually on different dimensions. So what happened for you, you know, after Maine? Where did that journey kind of lead you to?
Well, I was working in Bangor, as a matter of fact, and I was doing afternoons in Bangor on a radio station there, the infamous WGUI, which is one of the first radio stations in the United States. And one day, I received a call from a gentleman named Toby Arnold, who ran Toby Arnold & Associates here in Dallas. It was, at the time, one of the largest radio programming syndication firms in the United States. As a matter of fact, much of the music that you hear behind commercials, many of the products that you hear advertised were products that came out of Toby Arnold & Associates. So I went in and I spoke to my boss and I said, you know, I've just been offered an opportunity in Dallas and I think I'm going to take it, because I had always wanted to live in Dallas from the time I was a very young guy. And he looked at me and he said, well, I know you're just negotiating on your contract. And I said, no, I'm really giving you my notice. And he said, well, you know, that just can't be. And the day that I walked out, he still thought, after I had given him my notice, he still thought that I was kidding. But my first Dallas experience was really very interesting. I was speaking with Mr. Arnold on the phone, and I said, he asked me if I would come down and take a look and see if I was interested in the job. And this, of course, as I may have mentioned to you, this is the very early 80s. This was 1982, at the height of J.R. Ewing and all the rest on Dallas. And I said, surely, I'd be glad to. And he said, well, I'm going to have a gentleman pick you up. His name is Jim, and he'll be waiting for you at the gate, back before TSA. For sure. And I said, well, how will I know him? And he said, just look for the guy that looks like an FBI agent. Well, I got off the plane, and sure enough, here was a guy who looked like James Garner, the actor, and he looked just like an FBI agent. He was dressed appropriately. So I went over and I said, I'll bet you're Jim. He said, you must be Bill. I said, yes. And he said, well, right this way. And he took me out to the car. He said, we're going to go out to the car. They had sent a long limousine that had Longhorn horns the hood to impress upon me that this indeed was Dallas. And I think that I was sold on coming here before that, but that certainly put me over the top. So I moved here, and shortly thereafter, Debbie, who is now my wife, joined me. She came down. She had 48 hours to find a job. She gave herself 48 hours to find a job to move to Dallas from Boston, Massachusetts, where she was working in the cable television industry. Mm-hmm. And she came down, and by fate or fortune, she ran into a gentleman who was working for an architectural company, Shepherd & Boyd, which, for those of you who are in Dallas, perhaps one of their best known projects is the Crescent Hotel. Mm-hmm. He hired her on the spot because they happened to be from the same town in Boston. Wow. Huh. So she made the move down, and 2.5 years later, we were married here in Dallas. One of the hottest days in the middle of one of the the hottest droughts that has ever been seen in Dallas. It was 108 degrees at 10 in the morning when we were being married. All of our guests were they were dismayed because many of them were from the Northeast, but they did have the star encounter because it happened that our reception was being held at a hotel on the tollway, on the Dallas North Tollway, where Dallas was filming the Cattle Baron's Ball, or the Oil Baron's Ball, I'm sorry, the Oil Baron's Ball episode. So Larry Hagman and all of the rest were mingling with us just prior to the reception. So it was really a Dallas experience, and that's what brought us here. Then we were taken away. We visited many cities along the path. Clearwater, Florida, Tampa, Orlando, Jacksonville, Baltimore, Washington. You know, we were sent everywhere there was. And when we returned in 2005, we said to a very good friend of ours who was a principal in the Richardson School District, where do you think that we should live now? We had lived in Addison and Carrollton prior. And she said, well, you have a five-year-old son. We had been married 16 years when our son came along, who is now 18. My son's Brian. And she said, I think that you will enjoy Frisco because of its school systems. And we said, oh, we know Frisco. You know, you have to take a two-lane dirt road to get out there. And she said, not anymore. So we drove out, and by golly, we pretty much bought the first house that we saw and moved here from Baltimore, Washington, across Memorial Day weekend of 2005. And it was good for me because at that time I was flying back and forth across the country for Entercom Communications. And every week I was going through Dallas once, twice, three times. Mm-hmm. And it's like the old sign used to say, if you lived here, you'd be home. So we decided that home was, for us, Dallas. And we came back and we made the choice for Frisco, and it was the best choice we've ever made.
That's amazing. So what some of our, so you moved to Frisco 2005, and you know, looking from perspective, what do you feel like contributes to that best decision that you've ever made? What are some of the factors that helped you, you know, get to that state of mind?
Well, Frisco is truly a family city, and although we have seen significant change in the 14 years that we've been here, we've seen even more change since 1983, when it truly was, you know, just a stop on the dirt road. But and strangely enough, going back to the gentleman who met me at the airport, Jim, he was one of the first residents of Frisco. They lived here in Frisco in the old historic downtown area when there was not even a chain restaurant. And at any rate, we felt when we first drove through Frisco that the historic downtown area had a real nice hometown feel. There was a soft serve custard place called Double Dip that my son immediately gravitated to, along with the owner, Mr. Lloyd, as we used to call him. And we felt like it was a place where there was a great deal of family value. We could already see that our son had some skills with a baseball, and that he could actually pick it up at the age of three, and that's what he chose, and he's played baseball ever since. And Frisco has been designated by several sources as one of the best cities, if not the best city in America, to raise an athlete and train a professional athlete. So we felt that that would be good. We knew that the school systems were exemplary. We had the good fortune to meet some of the city leaders, and we liked the direction that they were heading. And as we looked at it, everything that we needed was within a 5 or 6 or 7 mile range, and the airport was close by. So we thought that this would be a good place. And certainly it has turned out to be better than good for the Pasha family.
So how about, and I agree with you, you know, perhaps I may not have as much big of a tenure living up here and working. You know, it's been several years. I've been in Dallas, you know, since 2007. However, I agree that Frisco certainly has a lot to offer, not only to its residents, but to its, I think, next generation. I think that the biggest impact, I genuinely believe that, the biggest impact that this city will have is probably on the current, you know, kids being in the school system, but also the next generation because of all the investment that has recently been made and some of the announcements, you know, with PGA coming into town and having, you know, I think it's a public-private partnership, right? Correct me if I'm wrong.
It is.
Just like the Dallas Cowboys facility here. So the course will be available to kids. It's not going to be only for, you know, for professionals. So I feel like that's going to be its biggest, I guess, I'm looking forward to seeing what's going to happen in the next, you know, 10, 20, 30 years and what the impact that will have to you know, even, you know, Ashley and I are aspiring parents and we wonder, you know, okay, what's going to happen next? You know, how this city will evolve, how the surrounding areas will evolve, because obviously, you know, there are some challenges with it, with the growth along the way. So speaking of which, what do you think are some of the challenges and you know, where do you think, you know, we should pay significant attention to perhaps resolve those challenges?
Well, you hit a lot of content there. You know, I think that, first of all, as an aspiring parent, as you self-described, you know, if you need any advice on how to make that work, let us know. We can tell you. But, you know, growth and leadership always tend to breed opportunity. And, you know, many people say that Debbie and I are entrepreneurs, when I really think that we're opportunists. Mm-hmm. We saw that yes, there are challenges, which we can talk about for all of the North Dallas region, but I also think that the opportunities that exist are not just for people who live in the now, like I do, because unfortunately, the likelihood of me seeing what happens in 30 years is pretty low. Likelihood of you seeing what happens in 30 years is very high. So it's not just for the people that live in the now or in the midterm, such as you would be, but also our children who will be the future. And I am constantly amazed when I look at the school system here in Frisco and the school population, which, you know, I often like to quote former Mayor Masso, who used to say, well, you know, the school system in Frisco is larger than the school system in San Francisco. But I think it also presents more opportunities. Everything from the Career Center, the Kate Center, to outstanding honors programs, to the National Honor Society, to outstanding athletics, to the very heart of it, the basis of it, which is the small school system, where every teacher knows every student's names and their needs. And I look at our own son, who I mentioned is an aspiring baseball player. When he was playing in the middle school years, there were many who said, oh, you know, this kid will never play high grade select ball. They were wrong about that because of the instruction that he received. And then they said, well, he probably won't play high school ball. And he ended up as the varsity captain. And then they said, well, he'll never play NCAA ball. Well, now he's going off next year to play NCAA ball in Oklahoma. And I attribute that to the kinds of people who don't believe in the school system that there are limits for our kids. I attribute that to coaches, professional and private, who don't believe that there are limits on our kids. And instead of putting obstacles in front of them, they put opportunities. Yes, Frisco certainly and the North Texas region certainly have or has some challenges. You know, we have challenges in building homes fast enough to maintain the growth. We have challenges in being able to have public transportation that allows people from outside of our region to come in and fill some of the ever-expanding job market. That is a great challenge. Finding people who are skilled for jobs in the now, and when I talk about that, I'm talking about people who can write code, people who have high-tech skills. We are certainly building for our children the job market that they will eventually fill in the next decade. But right now, there are challenges in getting the immediate personnel that it requires. We also have the opportunity and the challenge, it's a balance, of having major national and international firms relocating into our city. Because with those relocations, not only do you get all of the benefits of diversity, you also get all of the challenges of diversity. Our school system speaks, I think it's 40 languages in our school system.
I think it's even more.
It may even be more than that. And that requires multilingual teachers. It requires people with a greater skill set than you're going to find, forgive me, Bangor, Maine, in Bangor, Maine.
Yeah.
so with that, I believe that we are also in the future going to have some water challenges. I think that we are going to have, some climate challenges. It's hot in Texas. That's all there is to it. And with hot climate challenges bring even more energy challenges. So luckily for Frisco and the surrounding area, we have tremendous civic leadership and programs to grow more civic leaders so that we will be able to rise up and surpass any challenge that's put in front of us and continue to deliver growth and economic stability and opportunistic stability for our kids. It's nice to know that many of our kids will come back and live in Frisco after school. Certainly that is not the case in a state like Maine, where there's a great outflow of young people leaving nothing behind except for those who have been there forever and some people who are seeking refuge from cities like New York.
Talking about perspective there, for sure.
Yeah, you know, it's lifestyle. And I guess that comes full circle to why Frisco, why North Texas, lifestyle. You know, there's so many things that go into it. And for my money, the only thing that's missing for me is oceanfront and a beach.
I know, yeah. No, it's certainly a privilege, you know, to not only, we don't necessarily live up here, we at the time couldn't afford to buy a home, but it's certainly something that we aspire to have in the future. But we, you know, we work up here. You know, her parents, my in-laws, are also, you know, have been here for a long time. So it's a community that we embrace, that we cherish. And I remember when my family was flying in, you know, speaking of perspective and lifestyle differences. You know, my parents were flying in from Poland to see Frisco and see the star and and all these different wonderful amenities that this community has, and they just couldn't believe what they're seeing. You know, they thought I was already blessed enough by living in Dallas and going to SMU, and but it's just, you know, to your point, it's sometimes I think you go through your day-to-day routine, your job, you know, your responsibilities, and you may forget, or perhaps not necessarily reflect as much of how fortunate we are to be where we are, because of the lifestyle, the affordability of living, the no state tax, the climate, although people tend to complain lately, especially about the rain and unpredictability of such. But it's overall, it's just a great, great community. Yes, there are challenges and things to improve upon, but I feel like collectively, if we focus on the positives and what we have, rather than we don't have, so that we just don't consume, but actually take advantage of the existing resources and tools, I think that's going to be, you know, something that will pay us big dividends, not only now but in the future. So you know, my next question is pertaining particular to, you know, to your business. So obviously you've spoken very highly of the city, of this community. What have you found the most successful here as a business owner, you know, with Debbie, your wife? You know, you guys have multiple businesses. You know, how do you find its applicability, you know, to this community? And I would love for you to share, you know, some background, because you guys have some exciting things going on that I don't think many people perhaps have awareness. And I would love for you to highlight that.
Well, I'd love to. You know, I think that the great thing about anywhere that you choose to live is that it's always about connections, and whether those connections are professional or human, and often they become both. Just as I met you professionally and we now have a human connection, that was one of the reasons that we decided in 2010, my father passed away, and it happened that my wife's father passed away in the same year, within weeks of each other, actually. And at that time, I was in the process of a contract renewal with my company, Entercom. And I said to Debbie, you know, you have been a stay-at-home mom now for the better part of 7-8 years. And I said, it would seem to me that we have an opportunity to expand upon what you know and what I know. And our first company, Multi-Brand Media International, which is where the MBMI came from, was designed to provide support and consulting and products to the broadcast industry. It was originally, by the way, going to be called Passionet Broadcasting, mm-hmm. playing off of our last name, but one of our first hires was a gentleman named David Perlman, and David was the former chief operating officer of CBS. And David and I started to look around for some opportunities. And he said, you know, I think that it's a difficult name to understand, and we're going to be working with a significant number of broadcasters doing different things, and we should come up with something that is a little more representative of that. And so it happened that during a discussion in late 2010, we had an opportunity to pick up some business out of Istanbul, Turkey, a company called Dogus, D-O-G-U-S. And not many people know about Dogus. Dogus is a company that, much like ours, is very diverse, but on a much grander scale. They have 35,000 employees worldwide. They work in broadcast, of course, which is how we became involved with them, but also in the automotive sector, in the hospitality sector, construction. They are well known throughout Europe. So we were offered an opportunity to work with their radio and television group in Istanbul. And on a plane to Istanbul, David said, well, you know, we really are going to be working at multi-level here. And that's where multi-brand media came to pass. We started working with companies throughout Europe. And then one day at a meeting of broadcasters, a young man walked up to me, and he was a very young man. And he put out his hand and he said, are you Bill Pascha? And I said, I am, in the hotel lobby. He said, my name is Robert Dedish. And I said, oh, that's an interesting name. He said, well, actually, more interestingly, my name is Robert Bendujic Dedish. I said, that is an interesting name. And he said, and I want to work for you. I said, well, that's a surprise to me. And he said, well, I kind of have an interesting background. Turns out that this young man spoke 11 languages. He has an eidetic memory, which means that you can ask him what he had for lunch on July 2nd of 1994, and he'll tell you what and who and how long it took
him
where.
That's insane.
And he ended up opening our Vienna office, and we were focused primarily on broadcasting. We were working in the U.S. with Entercom and with Hubbard Broadcasting and CBS, and you know, the list went on and on and on. And we represented several products from overseas and domestically. We represent Ryan Seacrest's show in Europe and a company called Cover Media here in the U.S. that's based in London. They're the largest purveyor of high-resolution static images and HD video in the entertainment industry for redistribution. And so that business was going along very nicely. And we were invited by our client in Istanbul to take a trip with him to Italy. So we did. And on that trip, we met a gentleman who owns a very fine, beautiful hotel in the island of Capri called Capri Palace. And he sat down with us and he said to me, well, tell me about what you're doing in the broadcast industry. And I did. And he said, well, you know, I think that some of the things that you're doing are applicable to hospitality. He said, you know, in the hospitality business, we always say they only turn on the radio once, and if they don't like the music, they never come back. I said, well, that's really funny, because in the radio business, they say they only come into the restaurant once, and if the food's bad, they don't come back.
Exactly.
And so he said, well, we ought to talk about working together. And thus, the next company was born, which we called Maximize Brand Marketing International. And our young friend in Vienna began working to pick up some marketing clients. We marketed an unusual product first. It's a product called Leashinu. And Leashinu is a professional dog leash that retails for anywhere between $45 and $60 all over the world now. When we started with them, they were an idea. And we built their brand entry and we built their marketing. And they are now a major pet support brand. We began working with a local company here called Mobile UX Technologies. To try to launch a new product that they had. And that was kind of diverse for us. We worked on some political campaigns around the country. And basically we found that by utilizing our resources, which had become more vast in the years as they had progressed over the first 3 years, We found that by utilizing our personnel in Naples, Florida, and Boston, Massachusetts, and San Diego, and Vienna, and Halifax, Nova Scotia, and Vancouver, British Columbia, that we were able to start to work with a wide variety of products. And we began representing liquor retailers and liquor producers. And it began to flesh out when our friends at Doche, back to Istanbul again, said, you know, Dream, which is our hospitality arm, is going to expand in the United States. We're going to open some stores in the U.S. And we said, well, what are you looking to do? And they said, you tell us. So our research people began doing restaurant research, and we focused on the North Texas area because of the growth that we were experiencing. And ultimately, we placed two restaurants in the Star at Frisco, DiMario, which is an authentic Italian restaurant, and it has an interesting history, and Zitinia, which is a Mediterranean. The Mediterranean Zitinia is actually a partnership between Dream Dallas and Jose Andres's Think Food Group. Jose is a very interesting guy, likely to win a Nobel Peace Prize for his work in feeding thousands of people in Puerto Rico after the storms, in Houston after the storms, during the wildfires in California. He's a true humanitarian. And he partnered as an operational partner to the financial partnership of Dream to put Zitinia Mediterranean into the Star at Frisco. And my wife, Debbie, in speaking with the chairman of Dream, said, you know, we could play Monopoly and own the whole corner as you enter the Star. And all we have to do is find a concept. Well, it wasn't really too hard because there was no true, authentic Italian restaurant in the area. So we went in and we found a European concept that was already owned by Dream. We made some adjustments to it. They moved their corporate chef from Istanbul into Dallas to oversee other properties that they were going to open. And we went out and we found a chef. His name is Luigi Iannaro. And Luigi, it almost sounds like a marketing story. It's so great, it writes itself. Luigi was born in his grandmother's kitchen in Milan, Italy. Mm-hmm. He lived there for the first 14 years of his life because it was the warmest room in the house. And he decided that he was going to become a professional chef. And much like I experienced when I went in for that program director's job in Augusta, Maine all those years ago, when he arrived in Miami for his first executive chef job, he was a very, very young man, 18, 19 years old. And when the owner arrived, he said, who are you? And he said, I'm your new executive chef. He said, no, you're not. You're a kid. He made him start by washing dishes. But Luigi's skills then took him from Miami to Las Vegas and then here to Dallas, where we're very, very fortunate to have him. And we hope that in the future that concept will expand in the United States as it has in Europe. We're also very fortunate in that we work with a young man who I have known since he was a very young man. His name is Nusret. He is also from Istanbul. People know him much better as Salt Bae. Mm-hmm. He is the internet sensation that has 26 million followers on, that's the number. Something on Instagram. Like that, yeah. He's the guy who sprinkles salt with his right hand over everything that he sees. So, and he will be opening a restaurant in the very near future with us in Clyde Warren Park downtown, right next to the AT&T Performing Arts Building, actually, at 1900 Pearl. And So we started down this restaurant path, and we worked doing marketing for Nahida Restaurant, which is a fine, fine restaurant in the heart of Boston, Massachusetts. And then that expanded into other chains, some of which I can talk about, some of which I can't. A partnership with a major entertainment company that operates theme parks in Los Angeles, Anaheim, and Orlando, which as well as others around the world, which I'm precluded by an NDA from talking about.
But of course.
I always wear ears when I go to see them. So that expanded out very nicely for us. As that was happening, I ran into an old friend of mine. His name is Tom Hughes. Tom Hughes was in charge of presidential protection details for the United States Secret Service for many years. And Tom and I started to talk, and he said, you know, I think that we ought to, as I'm retiring now, we ought to start to protect people in the entertainment business. We ought to do close personal protection for them. You know the entertainment business. I know protection. And the next thing we knew, we were looking at forming Valorient Safety, which is now based out of Nashville, Tennessee. It's a Texas company, but it's based in Nashville, and we're licensed here too. And at that point, I was very concerned that we were getting very wide and thin, not very much depth. And it happened that at a dinner party one night, the former CEO of General Electric, Jeff Immelt, was in attendance. And we were talking, and I said, you know, Jeff, I'm very, very impressed with everything that you've done with General Electric. And, you know, I'm a new entrepreneur. And although I have some experience from when I was a kid, I owned a business when I was in high school that did pretty well. I said, I'm worried that maybe we're spreading ourselves too thin, diversifying too much. And he said, well, let me tell you something. He said, when people want a jet engine, they come to GE. And at that time, they owned GE Financial. He said, when they want to borrow $500 million, they come to GE. If they need a toaster, they come to GE. Throw it against the wall. If it sticks, sell it. If it doesn't stick, develop it so that you can. And I thought, wow, that's pretty heavy stuff from a guy who kind of knows what he's doing. So we went ahead and we moved forward with Valorient. The cash flow from the three companies was significant enough that we decided that we could get into some speculative things. And for the last year or so, we have been developing an online concept that has not really been fully released to the public, but it is a concept that allows hospitality ownership, hospitality employees, and hospitality guests to interact with one another online in a candid forum that is almost a public-private partnership, because it's the private companies involving themselves with the public for the betterment of both. And that's called Frisco Eats, and that's the fourth company that falls under the MBMI company's dome, if you will. So we are pretty diverse. Our employee number kind of goes up and down. We have a significant design center in Vancouver. We do a little bit of design here. We do have two creative directors, one in Vancouver, one here in Dallas. We do take on a lot of local project work. We're very quiet. We don't advertise, except in the broadcast business. We don't really advertise. Everything is referenced from a referral from someone else. We do a fair amount of research. That was really a big part of my background. For CBS and Entercom PACS and Communications, I was vice president of programming and research. So, or audience measurement, as the case might be. And so we do a fair amount of research, and the projects keep us busy. Debbie applies her knowledge. People always laugh because although this is audio, if you were to see my wife, she's a very attractive lady. I way outpunted my coverage. And she is not someone that you would look at probably and immediately say, well, there goes a licensed master roofer.
Yeah.
But she does have some of those technical skills that are really necessary in building restaurants and in building hospitality centers. And she was intimately involved with the design and build of the two restaurants at the Star. She is currently intimately involved with the same thing with our friend Nusret Salt Bay down in downtown Dallas, and that'll be open the end of the year, somewhere around the holidays, we hope. And she applies her knowledge of architectural and engineering and construction and environmental so that we are able to locate, design, and supervise the build of restaurants in very, very short order. So she handles the part where you have to have brains, and I handle the part where, I do whatever she tells me because she has the brains.
What a amazing story this is. You know, I like what you said about, you know, you operate quiet. I think that summarizes kind of, you know, you guys, you and Debbie, and because I think anybody that meets you in Frisco, unless they really take the time to get to know you, they may not know what really is cooking in the oven.
Well, that's really true. You know, in our company, although we have quite a number of people, Bell Bosky, who handles our design center in Vancouver, who also strangely has a wonderful history. She's done set design for Universal, and she's really an amazing person. But although we have a number of people, when our clients talk to us, they talk either to Debbie or they talk to me. Once in a while, they will talk to David Perlman, or a very fine business consultant and IT professional, Mary Jo McLaughlin, based in Naples, Florida. Or if they're in Europe, they're talking to Robert. But, and once in a while, they might get an email from Kathy McIntyre, who is my assistant. But we try as much as possible to limit the points of contact so that when people are dealing with the MBMI companies in whichever vertical we're talking about, they not only know that what we say we're going to do, we will do, but they know what the reputation is of each of the individuals. They know what the backgrounds of each of the individuals are. Again, back to Maine, Mary Jo McLaughlin was the C-level executive for IT in the Eastern Maine medical system. She then went on to consult for a couple of very large consulting companies. And when she retired a few years ago, we knew about that and we grabbed her. And she is a business consultant for many of our clients. David Perlman, his financial acumen is amazing, as well as his broadcast acumen. But his financial acumen is fabulous. He sits on the board of Tough Mudder, which is a very forward-thinking company.
Absolutely.
In the entertainment business, in the experiential entertainment business. So we want to make sure that the people that our clients or potential clients are talking to are people who really know the ins and outs of what they're talking about. These are people who don't have to work anymore. And we always say, and this is a terrible thing, but it's also a good thing. Everyone in our company is at the stage in their lives where they only work with people they like. We have had some situations where after doing a project, we simply say, you know, we can't handle that anymore. Mm-hmm. And we move on. We have, to my knowledge, I don't think we've ever been fired by a client. We have perhaps come to the end of a project because everything has an end date on it, especially in the consulting business. But we believe that people that we choose to work with and who choose to work with us are going to be people who are going to be lifelong professional friends. And many of them are people with whom we've developed real relationships like you. And we hope that that increases our value to them as a company.
Yeah, no question about it. It's again, very, very impressive, comprehensive story. I think there's so much here. I appreciate you for providing this depth because I think it will be very valuable, for the listeners as you extracted it very nicely. I have one question. Kind of to wrap it up. I know your time is valuable, but actually two questions. First, I want to hear a little bit more about Mr. Nusret. Obviously, you guys are protected probably with NDAs and the partnership and whatnot. But I wonder, what can you reveal? You know, this story is so fascinating to me. I think he just opened a restaurant in Mykonos, right? I was seeing
that. He did, yeah. He opened in Mykonos. Nusret actually has one of the most fabulous and interesting stories ever. As a young man, he became a butcher in a restaurant called Gunaydın. Uh-huh. He started actually washing dishes, but he quickly became the kind of guy that they knew had some serious skills. And he came to the United States. I think it was Peter Luger that he worked for a little bit. And then he opened a small butcher shop / restaurant in Istanbul. Mm-hmm. And one thing led to another. And ultimately, he was financed again by Dostream. And he brought his skills to the table. And I won't remember all of them, but he is in Doha, and he is in Dubai, and Istanbul, and as you said, Mykonos,
New York.
He's in New York and Miami, and all indications are that we'll be open in December probably. We had hoped to be earlier, but as you know, everything takes time,
yep.
And this will be. The only thing I can say is you will have to see this restaurant to believe it.
Really?
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
But they're also looking at sites in and have signed contracts in some other very large Western cities. There is a burger concept coming that is built off of the steak business. And of course, he does all of his own social media. This young man is amazing. He sleeps about 3 to 4 hours a day. He is in top physical shape.
Oh, unbelievable, yeah.
He has a recurring role on Narcos. He was even recently featured in a cartoon on Fox. The NFL, many of the players adopted his signature dribbling of the salt when they did the touchdowns for the last couple of years. But he's also a very nice guy. But my favorite story of Nusret is that when we were looking for a site here in Dallas, we were driving. This is absolutely fact. We were driving down Preston Road. Park Cities, down by Highland Park, and a gentleman, young man, passed us, and he pulled in front of us, stopping his car and making us stop, and he ran back, and he said, Salt Bay, a picture, and he stopped traffic in order to be able to take a picture, and we thought, well, that's just kind of aberrational.
Yeah.
And then we walked into a very well-known Highland Park restaurant for lunch, and everything stopped. The entire restaurant stopped. The staff came out, wanted to have photos with him. He took pictures with every single person who was sitting in that restaurant.
Did you guys provide him with some heads up, or you just kind
of? We had no idea. We had no idea that it was coming. They recognized him. And it took so long. He had to catch an airplane. It took so long, he never got lunch.
Wow.
He never got lunch.
Wow.
He's very generous with his time. He's a brilliant young restaurateur. I think that his fame is only exceeded by his talent. And I'm expecting that he will continue to grow. And, he has gone from nothing to being worth hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars.
It's in unbelievable.
Restaurants. Yeah.
The guy, I mean, you know, I try to look at primarily his Instagram profile, and then I see where the new concepts are opening, because it's just fascinating to me how the growth he's achieving. And obviously you said he's in top shape, but the guy doesn't speak. I mean, you can see him in some videos how he has his, you know, team of cooks and management, and he may say something in Turkish to them, but it's like, the emphasis is not on it. The emphasis is on art.
That's absolutely true. And the secret to this, and Nusret Tsalpe, if you're listening to this, plug your ears. The fact is that he has, over the course of the last several years, worked very hard to improve his English. And, you know, opening in Boston, as he will very shortly, and London, it's imperative in the United States that he does speak English. And even though I worked in Turkey for many, many years, in and out, spending a lot of days there, I will tell you his English is much better than my Turkish.
So looking forward to certainly, for him to open the restaurant. I was telling even Ashley, I can't wait to go there. And you know, just I love steak. You know, it's hopefully we can maybe go sometime. And
well, I think we ought to share one of those 24 karat gold encrusted steaks that he makes. I thought to myself, this cannot taste good.
Yeah.
Who eats gold? But edible gold is actually tasteless.
Interesting.
And the way that he prepares, you know. At Dream, they coined a word that I really like and I use a lot because we are very, very involved with the DiMario property in Frisco. And if you go there, you will find that my wife often touches tables and goes and greets and talks to people because she's the friendly one in the family. I'm the guy that sits in the corner and eats my salad. But you will find that that particular situation is that when you go, eatertainment, the word eatertainment isn't just a made-up word. It's a direction. It's a mantra that these restaurants live by. And quite frankly, these visionaries at the top of that company, and there are a gentleman named Fritz Schahenk, who is the CEO of Doche, and guys like Salpe Nusret. These guys are visionaries, and I always love being in a room with them because they're so much smarter than I am, and I learn so much from them. And that sort of leads me to another thing that I'd like to offer listeners. You know, I think that because we like challenges and because we like working with new ideas, one of the things that we do at our company is before we work with anybody, we give them what we call a unilateral non-disclosure agreement, which means we simply won't tell anybody anything that you want to talk to us about before we ever talk to you. And we like to help small businesses. And we do that often pro bono. We do it at very low cost otherwise for people. But if you're a guy who is trying to get things started, or a woman who is trying to get something started, and you would like a little insight, a little support, somebody that you can talk to in the middle of the night if you need to, we encourage people to call us. And, you know, I don't mind if you would like, I'll give you a number. The number that is direct to me all the time in Dallas is 469-362-1423, or I can be reached at B Pasha, like Bill Pasha, P-A-S-H-A, at M like Mary, B like boy, M like Mary, I like India, companies, which is a plural, .com. So B Pasha at MBMIcompanies.com. We handle those kinds of requests all the time, and we'd be glad to do that for your listeners.
Absolutely, and thank you for providing that. You know, Bill, I can't thank you enough. You know, for being here, your story, Debbie's story. You know, you guys are a powerful couple under the radar, yet very lethal. I think once combined, you know, those two skill sets. So last question, just to wrap it up, a quick. You know, piece of advice for people, you know, that want to kind of, you know, it's hard to replicate your path because it's so unique. But if somebody wanted to become a consultant, get in the hospitality industry, you know, do what you guys do, you know, what would that be that you would provide them with? What should they be on the lookout as they grow and prosper to be those professionals?
Well, we certainly tripped into the hospitality business, but anyone who wants to be a consultant, first and foremost, don't do it for the money. Do it because you want to help people. Do it for the altruistic reasons, the humanitarian reasons, and simply be willing to share that which you have learned. Apply the skills and the knowledge that you have in a way that you best think that if you were running the business, that you would do yourself, because the people who need your help most are the ones who can least afford it at all times. Because if they could afford it, they'd be doing great and they wouldn't need your help. And you want everyone to achieve your level of success or surpass it. And if you're not a cheerleader, if you don't believe that everyone can be successful and that you have a positive outlook on everything, even when there are challenges, bad business to get into. On the other hand, if you're like my friend Tomas here, good thing to get into, because he likes to help people to grow, which is the reason I think we're all here today. So thank you again. This was an incredible experience, and I value this opportunity.
No, thank you so much, sir. You know, I look forward to, again, to hopefully having a great experience of dining, you know, at Nusret as a, you know, as a guest. I loved hearing your story in more depth, and we'll definitely, you know, look forward here to the next years and more to come of friendship and partnership. So thank you again. Cheers.
Thank you. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you for listening to The Tomas Show. Please subscribe and share.
What's up, podcast? Thanks so much for listening to this episode with Bill Pasha. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Please, please send me a message and let me know what you think. And if you have a second, would love for you to leave a podcast review on Apple Podcasts. That would mean the world to me. Thanks so much, and looking forward to catching up with you soon. Cheers.